on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, KPP Financial President, Financial Advisor Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to InvestTalk. It is Tuesday, October 6, 2015. And I'm here to help you find answers to your money questions. Now, I don't have all the answers. I don't. But we can help get to some of them, improve your money management skills, and point to some resources that might be able to help you. So, and as you know, we talk every day about the complexity of managing an investment portfolio and the risks involved. We talk about it all the time, every day. So, this is something that we do. We try to help as much as we can. And again, we want to stress that we don't have all the answers. We just don't. No one does. Now, one of the biggest aspects of successfully managing risk, of course, is to diversify your portfolio across a bunch of holdings, a myriad of industries. The same can be said not just for your portfolio, but for your entire asset base, your whole net worth. Okay, when you think about your wealth, you got to talk about everything. You know, investing stocks and bonds with strong knowledge is always important, and maybe you need an expert to help you, or an advisor, that's great. But just like investing in stocks and bonds, you also have to have help in real estate. Unless you have prior experience or knowledge or special knowledge, you have to rely on somebody to help you with that. Understanding the risk you're willing to take in real estate as well as stocks and bonds is the same. Trying to understand, and the risks are different, the different types of risks, but understanding them is the same. You got to understand what the risks are. And bonds, as you know, we are historic low interest rates. So the next 10 years, you have to ask yourself, are the interest rates going to be this low? If we're at historic low interest rates, and we've been that way for some time, you know, will they revert to the norm, or and over what period of time? Do you know that they're at historic lows? And what happens if they do start moving up? Now, we've seen in the junk bond market, you know, the rates have gone up pretty high. You know, mortgage rates are very low still. So you have to understand the risk that you're taking and what tolerance of risk that they have in the various asset classes that you're investing. And, of course, one of the hardest aspects to consider is prices compared to how expensive or cheap they are. In the late 1990s, if you're talking about the stock market, the PE was in the 20s. The PE of the S&P 500, price-earnings ratio, were in the 20s. Is that low or high? Do you know? Well, it's high. It even peaked at almost 30 for the S&P 500 before it fell in the dot-com. Today, it's around 16. So is that high? Well, the average is 15 over a long period of time. But when we are faced with low inflation, the average could be a bit higher than that. So or is the market overpriced, underpriced, properly priced? Well, the overall market is probably fairly priced. Now you got to look at the various assets, the various classes, the various sectors. It gets difficult. It is not a simple thing. So, do you have questions about diversifying assets or the significance of the PE ratio? That's only one factor to look at when you're looking at a stock. You can check in now with any questions. Please feel free to join in the conversation. I really would like you to do that. Before we go further, let's check in with our 24-hour listener line. We're here for you. Our number is 888-99-CHART.
Good morning. It's about 6 o'clock over here on the East Coast. I was actually just wondering about your opinion on minimum wage and how that could affect, if they've talked about going up to 15 or whatever, umpteen dollars, how could that affect large cap companies that are well traded, like Chipotle, Walmart, things like that, as well as small cap? And that could induce a false correction with some of the small cap companies that try to push the cost of the employees down to the customer, or could it possibly hurt them if they try to absorb that cost? Thanks.
The companies that use a lot of minimum wage employees will raise their prices. They will raise their prices. They'll absorb some. They'll raise their prices also to reflect it. And they may change the way they do business to have less employees. You're seeing that in the fast food industry where, you know, different preparation of food is done by machines. But I don't think you need to worry about that really as much as you think you might, because, you know, the historically, if wages go up, companies adjust. And how they adjust is they'll cut costs, raise their prices, or a combination of both, or become more efficient. They'll do something. One of the ways they cut costs is cut the number of employees. And they will do that. They will. And then raising rates. Now, what it will do is probably, you know, cause a little bit of inflation, but we have so little inflation, I don't know if that's really a problem. So, frankly, I don't know if that's going to be a big problem for corporations. I don't think, in the long run, I don't think it really will hurt them much or at all. Why women are doing better at preparing for retirement. Women are doing better. Why? That's one of our talking points today that we're going to discuss. Also, U.S. exports fall in August to a three-year low. Our exports fall. We export a lot, by the way. People think we don't, but we do. We import a lot and we export a lot. And it fell to a three-year low in August. And five reasons American apparel is now bankrupt. This, I thought, would be a good teaching moment about, you know, what to look for in companies and why I keep, you know, talking about debt. Anytime I ask a stock, I always ask, well, the debt level's not too bad or it seems a little high. Well, when we talk about reasons American apparel is bankrupt, that's part of the issue is debt. So we're going to go through that. And I didn't get to last week, and I really would like to. You know, Tesla released their first SUV, $132,000. I'd like to talk about that a little bit more. And, you know, we had a jobs report for September last week, and I want to talk about that, not the jobs report itself, but the labor force in general. Why is it good, bad, a difference? Is our labor market in healthy condition? And maybe if it isn't, why doesn't it feel like it should? Why isn't it? Why? What's wrong? Maybe we can just explore that a little bit. I think those are the things I'm going to discuss today. But of course, what's on your mind is much more important than what I want to talk about. And that's sometimes why I don't get to all the issues I would like to discuss, because you have more important issues to talk about and you always come first. So, what happened in the market today? It was a mixed market. Dow was up 14, the Nasdaq was down 33, and the S&P was down 7. So, the broader market was down, and the narrow big blue chip stocks were up. They were up bigger than that during the day and just couldn't hold on. And, you know, we are in the midst or the beginning of, at the very beginning of earnings season. And we're going to start seeing some numbers come in. And frankly, to be honest, you're going to hear all kinds of reports about how they beat expectations. But to be honest, the numbers don't look all that great. Just because you beat expectations, really what you want to do is compare it to last year's earnings for the same quarter. Well, what's that going to look like? And I have a feeling you look at that number and you're going to go, that's not too impressive. You know, remember, expectations. Those are the experts who at the very end or the very beginning of a quarter start giving you estimates for the end of that same quarter, and they're pretty optimistic. And then they ratchet those expectations down all quarter long, and they kind of manage your expectations so that the earnings will definitely beat the expectations by the experts. But, you know, then they get to report all that exciting news of how they beat expectations. Big deal. You know, for you as an investor, you have to realize how they play this game and how they try to manipulate you. And that's how they do it. They do it with the numbers. What you want to look at is, okay, you made $1.32 per share this year for this third quarter. How much did you make last year for the third quarter? And then they throw in things like one-time expense items that, you know, well, that we really don't have that. So you got to kind of take that out to try to get a better number. But then again, what if they have one-time expense items every quarter, which some companies do? Trust me, they try to manipulate you. You have to look deeper. You have to look deeper into the numbers. I'm registered investment advisor Steve Peasley. I want to hear your comments and questions today. InvestTalk is made possible each day by KPP Financial. Our firm serves clients all across the country in all 50 states. If you'd like to see descriptions of our investment programs, like our new Discipline Equity Program designed for focused growth for maximum returns, just go to InvestTalk.com and click on the Investment tab.
Hey, Steve and Justin. My name is Ben. I'm calling from Biloxi, Mississippi. I listen to you on podcast. I was thinking about buying 100 shares of GGN, Greg, Nancy at the GAMCO, Gold, Natural Resources, closed-end fund. I've heard you talk about it a few months ago, and I was thinking not a long-term deal, maybe, just buying it. I could think of worth it. I don't want to throw away money, but, you know, it's $500, $500, $600. Just give me your thoughts on that. I were to try to play this thing for a year or so. All right, thanks, guys.
Okay, GGN is GAMCO Global Gold Natural Resources, Inc. It's a closed-end fund. Closed-end fund. A closed-end ETF. You know what that is? Closed-end means there are a limited number of shares outstanding. Whereas normal ETFs have an open-end fund, or the general ETFs have open-end funds where there's an unlimited shares. And the reason why that's important is a closed-end fund can sell at a discount or a premium to the assets it holds, whereas an open-end fund always sell at the net asset value of the assets it holds. Anyway, this is engaged in gold and natural resource industry. It pays a very high dividend and always has. It's right at 15% right now. And the stock is selling for $5.38. So now you ask yourself, well, what do you think of gold? Now, I'll tell you this. You know, gold is one of our higher positions right now that we have. And I'm not a big gold person, as I've told people before, but I do think it's an opportunity. I think gold is very inexpensive. Gold stocks, gold mining companies, you know, commodities in general have been beaten up, and I kind of like some of the commodities, gold and oil. You've heard me talk about both those. So I do like GGN because you're getting a pretty decent dividend while you're waiting around for it to go up. And it's been up nicely. It's been hanging around the bottom two or three times. It's tested the bottom, and that bottom has been around, you know, $5 and, I don't know, let's see, where is that? Probably $5.10, $5 and, you know, 20 cents, somewhere around there, and today it's at $5.38. And this is pretty, I've noticed that the moving average, certain technical aspects are telling me that it's formed a bottom and there's pressures building for it to go up higher. So I do kind of like GGN at this price. I do, especially for that dividend. I think the dividend's pretty good. It may not stay at 15%, but it's going to, the way that this operates, they're going to be a high dividend paying ETF or closed-end fund. Now you want to see if it's trading at a discount or a premium to its holdings. So you can check that out. I'm registered investment advisor Steve Peasley. Our number to join right now is 888-99-CHART. And I'd love to talk with you. Sam in San Jose is next with his question about oil. This is Invest Talk.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. In the investment markets, the portions that affect you and me, exchange-traded funds, ETFs, have emerged as the ultimate market disruptor. What happens when the ETF magic doesn't work? That's our talking point for Wednesday's podcast. Bring your questions and join us then.
888-992-4278. Let's talk to Sam in San Jose. How are you doing, Sam?
I'm doing pretty well, Steve. Long-time listener. Thank you for your work.
Thank you.
I have a very specific question for you on oil. Do you believe that the slowness in China, Euro, Greece, supply glut, all of that is factored in and now the supply is dwindling based on news we are hearing? Do you finally believe this is the bottom for oil?
Yes. I think all that's factored in. I think they factored in a little while ago, you know, a couple month, 2 months ago, and the oil prices have been falling and then trying to come up and falling. So it looks like the oil prices have found a bottom. Now, I'll say this, Sam. If we go into recession, oil prices have not found a bottom. They'll go down further. But I think from what I can tell, everybody knows that the shell oil, there's a bunch of those people are going to probably go out of business. We all saw the rig count for drilling just collapse this year. Just collapse. So there's hardly anybody there. So what's happening is supply is starting to shrink a little bit. We still have way too much oil, Sam. We still have more than we need worldwide. But, and we know that China, you know, last week I talked about China. You know, their oil demand is still growing about 10% a year. Not shrinking.
Yep.
So it's not like oil is not in demand in China. It's just not as much pressure as it used to be. But the low price has hurt a lot of producers out there, a lot of shale producers here in the United States, which we knew it would, and that's exactly what Saudi Arabia wanted to do. Get out some of the oversupply by keep pumping oil so drive the price down and get rid of the people that can't afford the low price, the companies that couldn't afford it. So I do think that most of that is built into the price now, yes. I do.
Excellent. So if somebody's trying to be long oil, probably this is a good time.
Yes.
To get entering, right?
Yes. Matter of fact, we went long a few weeks ago.
Excellent.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you for the call. Okay, let's go to Art in Menlo Park. He wants to talk about potash. How you doing, Art?
Good, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for the call.
Great. I just wanted to see what your thoughts are on potash, because I'm thinking about picking some up because it's been beaten down so much. I was just wondering what your thoughts were on it.
Okay. Potash Corporation, everybody. It's out of Saskatchewan, or whatever, Canada. Manufactured fertilizers and related industrial and feed products in the U.S., Canada, and Trinidad. It is a big company, $17.6 billion size. So it's pretty darn big. And of course, like all commodities, got hurt badly in the last year or so, maybe two. And now, is it low enough? Is really what your question are. Is it low enough to start to tease in? Well, I think that the prices at $21, they're going to make $1.93 next year, made $1.79 this year, and $1.86 last year. So it looks like they bottom on their sales. And, excuse me, they're, you know, at $1.93, that's going to make it right around, 11 PE at this price? And the low five-year range is 11 to 26. So it's at the very low PE range. Good return on equity. I kind of, looking at a chart, it looks like it may have put in the bottom right in here. But this would be a high-risk bottom, Art, because, you know, it just hit a bottom about 3 or 4 days ago and bounced up. So it hasn't retested that bottom, technically speaking, but it certainly looks inexpensive enough to be pretty attractive, Art.
Maybe a half a position or so?
That's what I'm thinking. You know, it has very low debt, very low debt. Mutual funds, believe it or not, have increased the number of mutual funds from a year ago. So that tells you some of the smart money is coming into it.
Oh, okay.
Okay?
All right. Thanks a lot, Steve.
Thanks, Art. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. That's POTAS. P-O-T is the symbol, everybody. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. I don't know if I mentioned the Tesla SUV. There's been a lot of write-ups about it ever since it came out, saying that the price is way too high. $132,000 fully equipped. Their new SUV, $102,000 is too expensive, according to a lot of recent writers. and they've reduced their numbers that they think they'll sell. So I thought that was interesting. They also said, remember, he's coming out with his new everyman's sedan in the next year or so, and they target a price of $35,000. Well, based on this SUV, the experts are saying that's going to be more like $50,000 to $60,000, not $35,000 or $39,000, their new sedan everyman car. So now the question is that going to really hurt them? Is that going to hurt Tesla with these downgrades? And will they really sell less cars? Well, I can tell you the SUV, that's going to be a pretty tough sell. Pretty tough sell, $100,000 plus for an SUV. This is InvestTalk, everybody. We've reached the halfway mark of the 1 hour we do every day. There's still plenty of time to join in the discussion. Do you want to talk about insurance? I know it's not very exciting stuff, but I have heard so many horror stories about life insurance, and, you know, I heard one today that really is disappointing. It's just really disappointing. Someone's selling someone else a bill of goods on it. So do you want to talk about it? Remember, I spent years in the field. Do you have questions about mortgages? Or how about reverse mortgages? Let's talk about that. This is InvestTalk.
This is InvestTalk for Tuesday, October 6th, and we're open to any money question. Could it make sense to refinance your home to invest more in the stock market? Bring your question to Steve right now. His line is open at 888-99-CHART.
Okay, let's get back to our question and answer period, our job of answering questions. 888-99-CHART is how to reach me anytime.
Hey, Steve and Justin. I have $1,000 that I'd like to invest, and I wanted to know if it would be best to put that in an index fund, mutual fund, or an ETF. I have a high risk tolerance, so I wanted to see which of the three you guys think would be the best. And also, what do you guys think of dividend reinvestment programs, or DRIPs? Thank you. Bye.
Oh, okay. I would suggest an ETF of an index fund, and if you want a higher risk one, you would try the maybe the Qs, the NASDAQ 100, or you can also do the mid-cap, Russell 2000, RWM, QQQ is the NASDAQ 100. I like DRIPs, dividend reinvestment plans. I like them because there's no commissions paid, and you just constantly buy a particular stock. They reinvest the dividends. But you do a DRIP with a big blue chip stock, and you know, just don't ever worry about it. You want to buy and hold that kind of thing. So the thing I don't like about DRIPs is that it's not so easy to get out because you're not really buying them through a brokerage. You're buying them directly to the company. So then you got to open up a brokerage account. You got to put the stocks in the company in the brokerage account. Then you can sell it. DRIP is for long-term investments. But don't put all your money in one stock. That's highly risky, no matter how good that stock is. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We're going to talk about these topics for today, I hope so. How women are preparing better for retirement. And that's going to be obviously the main talking point. Why men are falling back. And there's certain issues that should be concerning for this because not everything is women are doing better. They don't think they have less knowledge than men, probably because men have been looking at it a lot longer than they have. But they are doing better as far as gaining on putting money aside, doing better than men in certain aspects of investing. I always thought women make good investors, really. If they have the interest, they make good investors. And that has been proven out. Where everybody is not saving enough for retirement. I mean, that is a foregone conclusion. But women are doing better. Maybe because they're no longer, you know, there are more women in the workplace and they have to think about it. Maybe after, you know, being on their own, they have to concern themselves with it because they were relying on men before, which was never a good idea. I think women should always rely on themselves. not on a, on somebody else, no matter who it is. There's still a gender gap, though. Don't think there isn't. There is. Men have more knowledge on investments, probably because they've been doing it longer. And they have more confidence in investing. So, you know, also, it doesn't help that there's an income disparity between men and women. And I'm not being political. I'm just saying facts are facts. Women earn less than men in general. That's the way it is. So, therefore, it's harder for them to save more money. And that's a problem for them. But what do they? What they should do is just continue to put money aside, continue to increase their knowledge. It's a lifelong endeavor, just like for men. So that's what should be done. And it's nice to know that they are improving and things are getting a little bit better. So that's a good thing. And if you want to read more about this, we have an article on our website, investtalk.com. That's one of our main talking points today. 888-99-CHARGE, how you reach me right now. Whenever you have a question, Paul called from San Diego.
My question is, after an IPO is delivered and that stock price is set, the rise in that stock value now gives no further capital increase to the company. So what is... So driving that stock price up, how does that specifically help the company after the IPO, with the exception of, obviously, if you've got insiders that own the stock? But that's it. Thanks.
Okay. Many companies, almost all of them, all public companies, have retained shares when they go IPO. They own shares of their own company. They use those shares for many things, for future finance, for using them to pay employees, stock options. So when the stock price goes up, IPO means initial public offering to everybody. So when the stock price goes up, the value of the shares they own go up, making the company worth more. Okay, and so it does help them. It helps them a lot. So, yeah, it's important that they would like the stock price to go up. They will like. Remember, there's nothing stopping insurance from a public company from issuing new shares. They could do that, too. The stock price goes up, but many companies will issue new shares, sell them in the open market, put that money in their pocket, and use it for expansion, dividend payments, whatever they want to. Remember, there's three ways a company can produce money. For the company purposes, whatever that might be, building a new factory or just paying bonuses, they can use it for whatever they want. Three ways. One, issue more shares or sell some of their shares they already still own, okay, or issue more. Two, issue bonds. They can issue bonds and take in the money that way and use that money that, or they can borrow it from a bank or a financial institution. Those are the ways they can produce money besides selling their goods and services, whatever it is. So then they use that money for whatever you want. Hopefully, if you own the company, they're going to use, if they do that, they use that for, purposes that will make the company grow even more, not just squander it. Good question, though. Thanks, Paul. Appreciate it. 888-99-CHART. It's time for 888-992-4278. As far, let's talk personal, everybody. Is it smarter to go for a 15-year mortgage or sign up for a 30-year mortgage? What's a smarter choice? And, of course, a 15-year mortgage is going to save you thousands of dollars in interest. So why wouldn't you go for that? Well, there are reasons why you might sleep better at night with a 30-year mortgage. And there is a third solution as well. Now, some advisors might advise with no uncertainty to opt for the 15-year. I don't, though. That's not part of, I don't. I think you should go for the 30 years. Why? Because of the flexibility it gets. Now, at the same time, I think you should pay extra on your mortgage, so maybe you'll have it paid off in 15 years. I did this and had it paid off in 10 on my second house. The first house I didn't do it, but on my second house I did. Why do I want the flexibility? Well, remember, if you get a 30-year mortgage, the payments less, right? So that less payment means you can pay that less amount in times of financial hardship. What if you get laid off? But if you had a 15 mortgage, you have to pay that amount every month. If you pay less, you're in big trouble. You can't do that. So I like the flexibility it gives people. But you also need to be disciplined enough to pay extra every month. Like you have a 15-year mortgage. I like getting that mortgage paid down by the time you retire. I think that's a smart thing to do. So, and you need some emergency cash. You can't use all your money to pay the mortgage down. And just as a rule of thumb, about 30% of your income should go toward paying a mortgage, no more than 30%. That's InvestTalk Personal, everybody. If you have questions on this topic or any other money matters, time to check in now, 888-99-CHART. Or make a personal note. Send me one. It comes directly to me. Just click on Contact Steve on InvestTalk.com.
KPP Financial offers a whole range of financial services for their clients beyond the management of investment portfolios. And now, KPP Financial has a licensed real estate agent on staff to help you make the best possible choices when it comes to decisions about your home. To learn more about their investment programs, visit investtalk.com and click on the Investments tab.
Hi, Dan in Palo Alto, leaving you a voicemail message. Listen to you guys on 1220 and podcast both. Just a quick question. I was considering shorting Chinese internet giant Baidu that I believe you might have commented on about a week ago. And just wondered where an entry price for a short position on BAIDU might be for you guys and where you might put a buy stop on that security. Thanks so much. Love your show. Listen to you guys forever. Thanks.
Okay, Baidu, everybody. That is the Chinese provider of internet search, targeted online advertising, and other internet content services. I don't like shorting companies that make lots of money. And Baidu does make a lot of money. They're going to make $5.38 this year, then $7.06 next year. Sales are growing like 20, 30, 40% a quarter. So it's kind of tough to want to short the stock. I'm not saying I'd buy it, but I don't know because it's not cheap necessarily. It's a $149 stock. But if you're going to short it, I would, it looks like it's found a bottom about 130, now it's 149, and that's the second time it's been down there. So I would rather, if you're going to short it, I'd rather see you short it right around $190 or so. That's like $50 more up from here. Because I think that's where a lot of resistance, and I think that's about as far as it's going to go up and then come back down. And I'm looking at a chart that would fill a gap in the chart, that would do a lot of things that, from a charting point of view, tells me that that's where resistance. Now, if it goes and breaks above $190, if it goes up to 210, 215, then I wouldn't short it because then it's broken up above resistance. So there's a lot of resistance. There's also a lot of resistance, by the way, right around 153, 155. And I noticed it went there today and fell back down. So, if you wanted to take a high-risk short position, you could do it here, right where it is. Went right up to the 50-day moving average, went right up to where it was where it's gone up before in September, and then fell off, and now it's done it again. So it could easily fall off right from here. But that would be a higher risk short. Let's go to Robbie in Cupertino. How are you doing, Robbie?
Hi, I'm doing good. Thank you for taking the call, Steve.
Thank you.
Yeah. So my question is about Gilead Sciences. What's your outlook for the stock? It has fallen a lot off late. And also related to that about whatever free trade agreement that cause the biotechs to go down and if that's going to impact Gilead.
Well, the reason why that biotechs went down was a comment by Hillary Clinton about, you remember that company that charged a lot of thousands of more percent for a drug?
Right.
Yeah, and then Hillary Clinton commented on the whole, about that and what she's going to try to do when she comes president. And I think all that was just a bunch of hot air. In other words, she's not going to be able to do anything, and she shouldn't do anything. And just because one or two companies gouge doesn't mean anything. And so I think that particular issue is short term. Okay? I don't think. So when you look at Gilead and you look at earnings of $11.62 this year and $11.54 next year, it's going to go down 1%. That's pretty cheap on a $97 stock. And sales are still growing 20, 30, 40% per quarter. So the stock is fairly inexpensive. And this is right where it is a lot of support. So it's kind of tell me if you wanted to buy the stock, this is kind of where you would want to buy it.
Okay.
But okay. I don't think you should put a lot of weight in why the recent fall, because that really was all about politics. And long term, that doesn't really matter.
Okay.
Thanks for the call. Thanks, Robbie. Thank you. Okay. U.S. exports fell in August. They fell by 2%. Year over year, our exports has fallen by 6%. Now, our exports are falling by 6%. Well, why? Two reasons. First of all, the rest of the world is not growing nearly as well as we are. So that's one of the reasons. And another reason is our dollar is much higher. So it's harder to sell our dollar-denominated products to people, countries, whose economy is not doing so well, and we want them to spend more money for ours. And at the same time, our imports have been going up. So the trade gap between imports and exports have gone up about 15%. Now, why is that a problem? The problem is that when you import more than you export, that deducts from your growth of your economy, GDP growth. And until that turns around, it's going to be a problem. One of our exports that really has gotten hit is our petroleum products. Legally, we cannot export oil. Did you know that? We cannot export oil because it's against the law here in the United States. That law is kind of antiquated 30 years ago or so. I don't know, forever ago. And they probably should and probably are going to change it. But if you do any kind of refinement of oil, you can export that. So you can export gasoline. You can export any kind. Even if you refine it just a little bit, you can export it. And we were doing very well when oil was high and our production was going up. But now that our production is going down and we're not exporting nearly as much, and we have a world's excess supply. And it also didn't help in the short term that we imported a huge amount of new cell phones to be sold this Christmas from China. Doesn't help. Billions of dollars worth, not just a few, billions. So that doesn't help either for this most recent report. Interesting, huh? If you have a question you want answered right now, we're here. Give me a call. 888-99-CHARGE. How you reach me on InvestTalk. This is our number is 888-99-CHARGE. You know, InvestTalk is a two-way conversation. And if you have a question between programs, between them, you can still ask. It'll play it on the next InvestTalk. We're here for you at 888-99-CHART.
Good morning. This is Joe. I was wondering whether you can give me your opinion on U.S. Steel X. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. U.S. Steel is the symbol is X. And, of course, it's a commodity. Manufactured flat rolled and tubular steel products for the automotive container, construction, and apparel markets. And, of course, commodities have been beaten up. And a lot of people are looking at them to see if they can pick up bargains, and there's nothing wrong with that thinking. There is absolutely nothing wrong with the thinking. You just got to make sure that it is a bargain. Just because it's gone down a lot doesn't mean it's cheap. For instance, U.S. Steel is going to lose $1.01 per share this year. They're not going to make any money. Next year, they're going to make 82 cents a share. That's what the estimate is. Now, 2014, they made $4.44, so they made a lot of money. This is a cyclical stock. It kind of tracks the economic cycle, and, of course, it tracks with the commodity cycle, two cycles. It's, at $11.80, when they make 82 cents next year, That's going to put this P.E. ratio at around 15, 16. That's not cheap. That's not cheap. Now, it has pretty good return on equity. It has good cash flow. Sales have fallen 34% last quarter, 26% the quarter before that, 5% the quarter before that. So the question is it cheap enough? Is it a bargain yet? And it just found a bottom 2 or 3 days ago and bounced right around $10 or so. I'm going to tell you you might want to be a little patient, because I just don't think it's cheap based on next year's earnings. Even with a rebound, it's still, if it's only 82 cents, that's not that much. And you're only getting a 1.7% dividend yield while you wait. So that's not that attractive either. Other than those things, the stock looks pretty good. I just don't know if I would jump into it right now. I would not. I would not. I'm more comfortable with oil. I'm more comfortable with gold. And I don't even like gold long term. I don't. Oil, I like long term. Gold, I don't. So, but I'm more comfortable with investing in those right now. Okay, 888-99-CHART. Five reasons American Apparel is now bankrupt. American Apparel is now bankrupt. And this kind of is a lesson on why, on looking at companies and finding, okay, they're having problems, and they say, well, now, oh, the stock is down, I should buy it because it looks pretty good. It's cheap. Well, this is the problem. So in American Apparel's situation, first of all, you think about it as a clothing company. And clothing companies are notorious for fickleness as far as business, what's hot and what's not. So right there, it's kind of a warning flag there. But remember, this is the one where the CEO was ousted because of his allegations of sexual harassment. And then he fought the ousting, and he's filed lawsuits. So now American Apparel at that time has a bunch of lawsuits against it from people that he allegedly harassed. And then him trying to get his job back, suing the company that he worked for. So legal fees are eating him alive. So there's a reason. And they have too much debt. Remember how I talk about debt? To have $111 million in debt, and their sales are going down, and how are they going to service the debt? Always look at debt. Debt is a killer for companies. You know, only those companies that use debt to grow, like banks, should have debt or have much debt. And another thing is, remember, it was a clothing company. One of the problems you have is they're the ones that had that controversial branding with very scantily clad models, provocative poses. Remember that? They've changed that to go a different direction. And that means their brand is now a little bit confusing. Bankrupt. You stockholders that owned it are going to hold worthless shares. But it's a lesson. Watch out. Is the problems that a company has, can they go away, or are they permanent? And it's hard to determine. Our hour's up. Thank you for being here and spending this time with me. If you have a money topic you'd like us to discuss, send me a note. Just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve. I'm registered investment advisor Steve Peasley, and on behalf of Justin Klein, everyone at KPP Financial, thank you for listening, and we hope you'll join us again tomorrow on InvestTalk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.